Welcome to the Evolved Caveman, where men learn to be successful and happy with your host, Dr. John Schinnerer, as he shares the most impactful ideas and practices for you to get the most from your relationships, your work, and from your life. Now here's Dr. John.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. John back with the latest episode of the Evolved Caveman, where we try to help you to evolve past caveman status. And today, I am really thrilled to have with me as my guest, Jay Scheer. And Jay is the owner of Jay Scott Consulting Services. And Jay has loved all things business since as long as he can remember. He was interested in understanding why some businesses succeed while others fail. Following a successful 30-plus year corporate career, Jay started his own coaching and consulting business, where he uses his knowledge, experience, and ability to inspire others. Jay's also the host of Business Minds Coffee Chat, a conversational-style business show spotlighting business leaders and influencers with the goal of sharing insights and helping to lift others. Jay is a husband, father, a speaker, a musician, drummer, of course, we can touch on that later, and part-time trivia host. I have no idea what that means. Jay, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing?
John, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate it.
Well, to the listeners out there, the only reason I invited Jay onto my show was for his voice. His voice, I just can't get enough of. It's such a great radio voice. I absolutely love it. So anyways, tell me a story of you at your very best, kind of where you've struggled and then where you've overcome that struggle, just to start off so we get a feel of you.
Okay. Well, great question to start off with. I want to back up for just one second when you mentioned my voice, and thank you for your kind words on that. I do typically say when people comment on my voice that I have a face for radio. So it works out well.
Not true.
Oh, come
if you're
on.
Listening to the audio, it's not true.
Okay. So story. Perfect. I'm going to talk about ego for a couple of moments, if I can. I think that's a topic that you probably know quite a bit about, but it's one of those topics that I had to learn some very tough lessons about it. And, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, I've spent 30, 32 years in various corporate positions, loved it, thrived in those roles. Early on in my career, I was moving at a fairly rapid pace. And what that did is it allowed my ego to inflate each time I saw an increase in pay, or there was a new title, new business card, a company car, all those kinds of wonderful things. And I didn't realize it at the time because I wasn't self-aware enough. And I also wasn't receiving feedback from others. The feedback that I was receiving was positive feedback, right? So ego's going like this, promotions are coming. And it really started to impact the way that I showed up to the world, John. And it, although I was who I am at the core, it was moving. I was moving further and further away from that, and I didn't like it. And it came to a head actually with a family member one day who made a comment to me, because apparently the way that I was treating others and treating some particular family members, it was not aligned with my core values and who I truly am at my core. So the comment that was made just stopped me in my tracks, and I realized that this is a problem, and I need to start reassessing and reevaluating and get my ego in check. And the reality is just get out of my own way. So that was the kind of the negative side. There were some positives that were there along with it, but the ego is you've probably heard of the book Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. It's an excellent book, and it's one of those books that, quite frankly, I wish I had read, or at least it was available 30 years ago. So That's that side of it. On the positive side, when am I at my best? When I am, when Jay is doing what he is meant to do. So I realize that my strengths are using my voice, my ability to connect with people on a deeper level, my ability to inspire others, my ability to help business leaders get clarity around their goals, around their mission, around their values, helping them put the right type of metrics in place that they can measure success and create the kinds of businesses that they are most proud and excited about. And when I am doing what I was meant to do, which is just that, I'm in my sweet spot. It's that feeling that I'm operating on all cylinders. And I am so excited about it. I can't wait to get out of bed in the morning. So that's when I'm operating at my best.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing. To go back to your earlier point of, you know, you were saying your ego got inflated with, you know, new titles, new business cards. My guess is more money.
Yeah.
One of the things I talk to people about is the man box culture, which you know, but it strikes me that a lot of us men, we really subscribe to that notion of man as provider for family, which I think is a really good value in general, but I think that it gets warped over time. And so I'm curious as to, well, it gets warped and then we neglect the very people that we set out to provide for. So we stop or we limit time and our attention given to our spouse, partner, children, and they get resentful and angry. What are some of the reasons besides ego that you can see men doing so?
So if I want to make sure I'm understanding your question, I was chasing things, John, that would, let me back up for a moment. I thought that I needed to show up a certain way in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I've done a lot of due diligence and a lot of self-evaluation and a lot of self-work. But I think a lot of that was based on biases that I brought into this world, the way that I was raised, conversations I was having with others, conversations I was having with peers. And what ended up happening for me is I was acting a certain way and showing up based on what I thought other people needed me to be in order to be successful, right? So my idea of what success was really was tied to someone else's story, right? Not necessarily mm-hmm. to who I was or the way that I defined success. And I bought into that, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to move up the corporate ladder, you know, I have to dress a certain way. I have to speak a certain way. I have to say certain things in the right type of tonality. I need to lead a certain way. And I think you and I may have chatted about this once before, but I was wearing various masks in order to accomplish those types of outcomes, mm-hmm. right? And I didn't realize it at the time, but it was just the way that I was showing up. And part of it was probably to prove to others that I could do what I said I was going to do. But it wasn't the most comfortable situation in the world. You know, so I would get home at the end of the day and all of a sudden, you know, I'm taking those masks off and I'm having to come down off of a situation that I had created for myself and try to reconnect the relationships that were most meaningful to me. Does that somewhat answer the question for you?
Yeah, I think you're exactly on point. I think that to me, one of the big realizations in your answer is that distinction between intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation, or are we living our lives for what other people think we should be doing and to get their praise, whatever, you know, the reinforcement could be praise, it could be title, it could be money, it could be ego stroking or feeling of importance, or are we living our lives for our internally chosen values and to live in accordance with those and in keeping with those? And I think for most of the men that I've talked to, myself included, I think, let's say I'll keep it to me, my life was very extrinsically motivated for many years. And I think one of the big shifts to make in evolving out of the man box is, holy shit, I need to figure out what my values are and I need to live according to my values. I need to live to please me so that I can look myself in the mirror and go to bed at night and sleep well, not to please everyone out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. And as I look back, there's no question that I was externally motivated. And, you know, obviously I came to realize many years later that fulfillment, happiness, joy, that comes from the inside. You know, I'm not going to achieve those things through extrinsic motives, right? Or things. You know, we get caught in that trap many times where we think that, oh, you know, if I get that nice car or that nice house or, you know, that the beautiful wife and, you know, all of these things, that it's going to make me happy. Mm-hmm. And it's, once you actually have acquired them, what happens, right? We immediately want more, right? We want the next thing because it's not enough. And it may feed a certain need that we have, but it's so quick.
And, then, you know, that, pardon me for interrupting, that point was driven home to me. I have a client worth, I don't know, $400 million or something. And the family had acquired, I don't know, $40, $60 million private jet. And they were happy with it for a few weeks. And then the father in the family was like talking with a heavier hitter and was like, well, yeah, but their jet was $80 million. And I was like, oh my God, like there it is. Like that's smack you in the face, full truth right there. Like it doesn't matter how much money you have. If you haven't done the inner work to understand, hey, I'm making an upward social comparison, this is going to make me feel shitty.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think those objects do add something to us for a few weeks, maybe a couple months, but then we get on the hedonic treadmill and then they stop adding any satisfaction to our life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, and you said, I mean, using the treadmill as a great analogy, it's like trying to figure out how do I get off of that when these things just continue to feed me, right? And until I have some sort of intervention or meet someone like you, as an example, who can point these things out and help to allow me the opportunity of perspective and look at things through a very different lens, that's when I actually realize that those things, that stuff, you know, those externals are really not helping me.
And so when did you figure that out? How old were you?
Yeah. So it really wasn't until I was in my 30s, and where it started was a Dale Carnegie course came into my life. And it was through one of the corporations that I was working for. And that was really my first introduction into the self-improvement world and getting into psychology. And from there, it just blossomed. I could not get enough, but it took years and years, and it still takes work, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something that you're, you know, one and done. I have to constantly work on it. It's my mindset, right? Yeah. So it's always looking at the making sure that I do have the right perspective, surrounding myself with the right people, right, who challenge me, who are willing to provide feedback, who are honest and candid, that I have trust and faith and belief in. And but that's really where it started, was in my 30s, and it was through reading, it was through listening to tapes, it was coming in contact with amazing people who could help coach me and could help guide me and mentor me. And, you know, but as I mentioned, you know, we've talked about meditation before. It's like meditation. Mm-hmm. It's a practice.
Yeah.
So do we ever read?
Yeah.
Right. It's a daily practice. Do we ever get to the pinnacle? I don't, right? It's every day I show up and I keep doing it because I enjoy the practice and I see the benefits of it. It's the exact same thing with working on ego, with working on realizing that happiness and joy and love, that all comes from here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. One of the little jokes that I'll tell at times is, you know, I missed the perfect name for my podcast by that much. You know, it's the Evolved Caveman. And I had a guest on early on who kept referring to himself as the Evolving Caveman. And I was like, oh shit, that close, you know, because you're right. We're always growing and adapting. And so let me ask you this, what would you say to like a male listener who's 50 and thinking to himself, hell man, like I'm just too old. Like I can't change.
Oh my gosh. Well, first I would say, stop. We have enough evidence, enough research that shows that we can all change. We can all learn new skill sets. We are adaptable. I mean, we're adaptive humans, right? We've done mm-hmm. that throughout history. That's one of the great things is that, you know, we can learn, we can continue to grow. So here's the thing. We have to decide for ourselves that we are in enough pain and that we need and want and desire to make that change. So if someone has come to a point where they realize that I need to do something different, fantastic, right? That's a great starting point. But if you're going along and you're thinking that, well, you know, all is grand in my world, right? My relationships are falling apart around me. I am not, you know, my businesses are not successful. I'm just not feeling it inside, right? But from the outside, others looking in are telling you, wow, you know, you've got it together, right? You're successful and I'm believing it, right? Until I've reached that point where I recognize the fact that I have to make change, change isn't going to happen. It can't be forced on you. You have to be in a place where you're ready for it and you're willing and able and want to make the change. Once that door is open, amazing things can start to happen as long as you're willing.
Yeah.
So 50 years old, 60 years old or older, we all have the ability.
I really respect the hell out of those. Like I've had male clients come in at the age of 70 or 75 and say, you know, I'm having this problem with my wife. I really want to work on this. And I'm like, wow, I'm really impressed right now. Like that to me is the epitome of humility and growth mindset and the lifelong learner. And I love that idea of, you know, when you're ready to learn, the teacher will appear.
Yes.
And so I absolutely agree. Change cannot be forced upon us.
Yeah. And it's
failed.
as have I. And it's the same thing in a business situation. So the clients that I deal with, and I always say that, you know, an ideal client for me is a business or business owner that's experiencing pain. And we can define that pain in lots of different ways, but my experience has shown me that until you've reached that point, you may hear someone's advice. Someone may sit down with you and lay out a framework and a great plan for you. But if you haven't reached that point where if I don't take some sort of action, then I'm going to lose my company, right? Or we're going to lose significant income here. Until you've experienced that pain, I'm not necessarily a good fit for you. And it's interesting how that happens. And it's similar in our personal lives, right? I mean, take the dentist as an example. We know we need to brush our teeth every day. We know we need to floss, right? We need to do those things. That's how we maintain and, you know, keep our teeth healthy and our gums healthy. But many of us avoid the dentist because we have this story that we tell ourselves that, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to be painful. There's going to be cavities, what have you. And we avoid going to the dentist until we've experienced the toothache or something happens, right, that creates pain, and that pain creates the motivation that says, now I have to act. We're motivated by one of two things, pain or pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And which of those is the stronger motivator?
Pain. Definitely pain. Bingo.
Definitely pain.
By three, four, or five times to one.
Yes. So it's an important motivator, and it's important that we're paying attention to those red flags, right? When we feel those pains, or when we sense those pains, or we're looking at certain metrics in our own business that tells us, that dashboard that says, you know, there's a problem here. I need to do something about it. I've let this go too long.
So let me ask you this. You get a new client coming in, middle age, they've experienced some of this pain, so they're self-motivated, and you know, they're simply thinking a lot of positive thoughts. Is that enough to enact change, or to what extent does action come into the picture?
Good question. So positive thoughts are great. Positive thoughts are a good starting point. But just being positive about something is not necessarily going to make it so. So I'll bring up as an example, The Secret.
That's what I was thinking. Yep.
Yeah. And that's a classic example of thinking about something to manifest it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can think about something, which is incredibly important, right? That's why vision boarding and having goals and those sorts of things are critical. But until you actually take some sort of action, absolutely nothing is going to happen. And so action is critical. The thinking part is critical as well. But if nothing else, act, right? Mm-hmm. Take action. So the A in action is actually part of a formula that I use in my own business. And that formula starts with mindset. So if you think of MPH, miles per hour, and then the word gas. Okay, so MPHGAS. And what that stands for is mindset, purpose, habits and behaviors, goals, action equals success. So I look at it as a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
So John, if I gave you that recipe, you would be able to take that recipe and possibly bake a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. Don't know how it's going to turn out. It's until I give you the individual parts of the ingredients, right? So you need a cup of this, you need a spoonful of this, so on and so forth. Then we can have sustainable and repeatable results. So that's a piece that is critically important, but none of this happens without taking action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so if we take that and apply it to a business, so is that the MPH gas formula, is that different from the formula for transforming and driving change in a business?
That is the formula.
Okay.
So that is a very powerful formula for transforming a business, driving change in a business. And, you know, as I mentioned, the M component of that for mindset really has to be the first piece of it. Because if we have all the other pieces, but we don't have the right type of mindset, a champion's mindset, a mindset that says that no matter what, right, we're going to move past this, we're going to be solutions focused, we know that we are going to be able to create success. There's a very strong belief system. There's the growth mindset. If we don't have those things, it is going to dramatically affect our ability to execute on the other areas. And if you look around at businesses that have come and gone, businesses that have not been able to sustain. Maybe they had some, you know, some significant peaks and valleys. When you study those businesses, you're going to find that there is some component or a combination of components of that particular formula that were not, they weren't acted upon, right? They weren't executing on. And that where you mentioned in the intro that I've been interested in business since I was a kid, those were the kinds of questions that I was asking. I mean, I had conversations with my parents. I had conversations with friends' parents about business. You know, why are these businesses succeeding? I would drive around. My father was a real estate agent. I would drive around with my father and with my family, and I'd look at all these different buildings in the town where I grew up, and I would just envision what was going on inside of those office buildings. And I, you know, I had this mental picture of what it was like, what it felt like, and the types of conversations that were happening in inside of these businesses, and really trying to dig and find out what's making that business successful when this business over here is flailing, right? They're just not getting it done. And that's where that formula started to take shape. And it took time to develop, but it was putting all of those pieces together and finally realizing that that's it. That's the system.
Does it change if you go from individual to business? In other words, like I have an individual purpose. Do I need a purpose for my business?
So business to me is personal. I don't separate the two. So when you have a driving purpose for yourself, that driving purpose translates into your business purpose. And it also ties to your core values. So the way that you show up, John, the way that my clients show up in their businesses is how they are at the core in their personal lives. So if they're not a good person, right? If their core values show that they're willing to do things that are unethical, that just are not the essence of a good person, guess what? That carries over into business. So it's one and the same. So to answer your questions, you can use that exact same formula for personal success as you can in transforming and driving change in your business life.
Okay. I can see it more at the C level. What about like, if I'm, I don't know, a programmer going into Facebook, to what extent does my purpose have to mesh with Facebook's purpose for it to be successful?
Sure. Well, do you have clients? Right? Are you interested in client acquisition and growing your business? If you have a business, not a hobby, if you have a business, then it applies whether you're C-suite or whether you are the person who is selling products on Amazon or on Facebook Marketplace. You know, you're going to make decisions on how you show up and how you serve your clients based on your values, right? Based on your purpose for your business, goals that you establish for yourself. And if you don't have any goals, or if you haven't defined a purpose or a mission, you're like a rudderless ship, right? I'm just going to go along, and whatever ends up happening happens.
Can you run me through a case study using MPH Gas?
Sure. So multiple clients, but I'm thinking of one right now that has a business that was going along, but they didn't really have a structure in place. They didn't have systems in place. They really hadn't established goals for themselves. And you've probably seen this time and time again, where you have someone who is very good with their hands and they start to create and they start to sell a product or a service, but they don't have their arms wrapped around the business, right? They're working, you've probably heard this term before, you know, they're working on, excuse me, in the business, but not working on the business. Michael Gerber and E. Myth Revisited made that a very popular statement, but it's so very true. So this particular business that I'm referring to, when I engaged with them, they were working very hard and they had clients, but they had nothing to show for themselves at the end of the day. So they were just working tons and tons and tons of hours. And they did good work, but there was no particular method to the way that they engaged with their clients. There was no process involved for follow-up, for scheduling. So when we first started to meet, the very first thing that I worked on with them was really a mindset assessment, if you will. And this is a series of questions that I ask, and it's trying to understand how they think about life in general, how they think about their business, how they show up every day, what their morning routines are, the types of things that they think about when they show up to the office, what happens when they walk in that door. So we go through a series of exercises and questions to hone in on what is the baseline today for that mindset. And then in order for them to achieve the results that they're looking for, which we start to define the purpose for that business and what their goals are, right? In order for them to get from where they are today to where they want to be, what kind of person do I need to be? What type of organization do I need to be? How do I need to show up, right? What kind of conversations do I need to have? What type of people do I need to surround myself with? So there's a whole process to that that we work through. And habits and behaviors, which is the H part of that, many times we have to change the habits that we have. So if typically for me, if I go to the office and the first 15 minutes of the day, you know, I'm sitting around drinking coffee and telling, you know, negative stories about what happened the day before, or talking negatively about the person down the street, or spreading gossip, you know, how is that going to impact my ability to grow and my ability to serve? Probably not very well, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm out of shape, how is that going to affect my ability to show up empowered and be a light for others in my organization? Probably not very well. So there are things that I need to look at changing if I truly want to grow a thriving, successful business. And it all starts with the individuals. And then we get into, John, the right type of people, how we hire, and how we hire against our values, right? That's why it's so critically important that we've identified and know what our core values are, because it impacts every decision that we make in that business. So if I'm not around, as an example, if I have a business and I have employees and I'm not there, yet something comes up that the employees need to solve or answer a question for someone, they know, because I've hired them based on core values, they know the types of decisions that I as an owner would make. And I know and trust that they're going to make the right decisions because we're all aligned. They know what our purpose is.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Sorry. How does emotion enter into this equation? Because like one of the things I've seen many times is a CEO of a, you know, small to medium sized company who comes in the morning and is often irritable, doesn't interact with the employees as he walks through the office place, goes into his office, shuts the door, starts doing email. And everyone around is kind of worried about what they did to offend him or her. How do you see emotion kind of figuring in?
Yeah, well, it figures in a big way. So if I were to see that were happening, one of the very first things that I would do is I would create an exercise where that CEO, as soon as they pull up to the office, before they get out of that car, they stop, right? And they visualize, who is the type of person that I want to show up for today? How can I be my best self? What do I need? How do I need to feel? How do I need to breathe? Right? How do I need to stand? So I'm going through this visualization process, and part of that is breathing. It is thinking through exactly what I want, who I want that person to be. And when you do that, and when you stop and go through that exercise for 3 or 4 minutes before you walk in that door, it can dramatically change exactly what you were just talking about. Because now I realize that I need to stand differently, right? I need to breathe differently. And when I go to turn the handle on that door, I'm going to show up and be the person that I know I can be, the most empowered person possible, and with the right type of emotion. So my team is excited. They're glad that I'm there, and we're ready to own the day.
Yeah, I really like the idea of kind of asking yourself, where's my energy right now? Like when you're in the car, and if you're at a 4 or a 5 on a 10-point scale, you need to bring it up 3, maybe 4 notches. And so you could actually kind of jump around a little bit when you get out of the car, or, you know, bounce or do some stretching or some jumping jacks or something, even mentally, to just tell yourself, I'm going to bring my energy up 3 points right now. The other thing that I've come into contact with a lot lately with COVID and the fires is people are worrying a lot. They're besieged by negative thoughts, and they just can't seem to get untracked off of them. Mm-hmm. And I heard an exercise that I really like. And basically it's, you know, sit in a comfortable space, breathe deeply, close your eyes. Now I want you to imagine a DVD player and focus on the stop button on that DVD player. Now bring to mind the situation that's causing these negative thoughts, whatever the negative thought is. And now I want you to picture hitting that stop button on the DVD player. So it's a thought stopping technique using visualization. And when you first start, you may have to do it 20, 30, 40 times a day. But with practice, that number goes down each day.
I like that. That's a good exercise. And it just brings to mind that we need to focus more on our thoughts and recognize mm-hmm. the thoughts that we're having. Because if we don't, right, we're allowing that to control our operating system. And we know that the majority of our thoughts are negative. So we have mm-hmm. to be in a position to pay more attention to that and ask ourselves, is that really the case? So if we are, you know, speaking negatively about ourselves, if we're saying that, you know, I'm not good enough to do X, or I'm not smart enough to do Y, we really need to stop, hit that stop button that you just described, and ask ourselves, really? Is that really the case? And then mm-hmm. use an example of where you have been able to accomplish that particular task in the past. And know to yourself, you have to have a strong enough belief system that no matter what the situation is, I may not have a solution yet, but I will. And sometimes we have to reframe the story that we're telling ourselves in order to move forward and see the kind of progress that we want and that we expect.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking at time, and we're getting about 5 or 10 minutes left. One of the areas that I wanted to touch on with you is sort of, you know, if you're making the changes in the habits and you're kind of upping your social game, a big part of that is networking. Mm-hmm. So let's go a little bit into the do's and don'ts of effective networking.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I love networking, and what I enjoy about it, in addition to just meeting other great people, is looking for ways to collaborate, looking for ways to serve one another. There are definitely some proper ways of networking and ways that are not very effective. And let me give you an example of something that you don't want to do. So if you're invited to a networking event and you bring a stack of business cards, let's say you've practiced your elevator pitch, what you don't want to do is walk up to someone, hand your business card, and say something along the lines of, "Hey, I'm Jay with so-and-so, and I've got the best product or service that I know is going to solve all of your problems. So here's my card. Give me a call. Give me your card, and I'll follow up with you in the next couple of days, and we'll schedule lunch," right? So a couple of things that are wrong with that. First and foremost, you have not established any type of rapport, which is critical. So there's no trust. There's no relationship there. So one of the first things that you can do is start asking better questions, right? Seek to understand as opposed to being understood. So ask some questions, right? Get to know this person. And not all about their business. Get to know them as a person first, and then try to determine what type of business is this person in, and is this someone that I could possibly serve, right? Right now, I know nothing about you. I don't know what your pain points are. I don't know if there is even a good strategic fit for what I have to offer, right? So bottom line, get to know somebody first. LinkedIn is obviously a very popular business networking site, and it's a great platform. And I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit. I have found that when someone wants to connect with me, if I don't know them or they weren't referred to me by someone else and I accept their connection request, 9 times out of 10, within 3 minutes, I get that in-mail message trying to sell me on something. And again, that's the exact same situation that occurs when you're at the networking event with the person who shoves the business card in your face and says, "I've got, you know, this wonder product or service. I know I can solve all your problems." There's no relationship, right? You haven't built rapport. You don't know what I need. So first start with the other individual. Get to know them first. But networking, there's power in that. And if you are not focused in working on building your network, you're missing a huge opportunity. So look for ways to network. There's plenty of networking events in most large cities across the country. A lot of what we're doing today is virtual, but there are groups that are still starting. They're starting to get back together again. But, you know, even virtually, it's a great opportunity. I mean, I'm involved in a number of networking groups that meet virtually. It's different, right? It's different than being face to face with someone, just like it's different for the two of us right now. But
when I find the virtual networking, if I can jump in there, is more valuable for me because it's not limited by geography. And I find the quality of people involved, depending on who's organizing it, goes way up. And I love the people that are there to serve first and ask second. Mm-hmm. I just think that's the right way to go about it. I think that the idea of serving others, I don't think you can go wrong with that approach.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I would even take it a step further and look for ways to give, give, and give before you ask. right? There were plenty of opportunities for you to be able to share your brilliance with others. And there doesn't have to be any type of monetary exchange. Look for ways to serve. Look for ways to give. Look for ways to connect someone with someone else who they can benefit from. Don't be afraid to do that. There's power in that.
Yeah.
And
no, and I think networking is such a huge part of success. I mean, we did, well, and I think, you know, the podcast is a huge way to network. I love the people that I've met, yourself included, that there's such high quality individuals that I've interviewed. And then when we went, when Jory and I, my fiance, went to create a global virtual summit when COVID started just to serve people, we went and tapped a bunch of people that we had interviewed already and some others, but 98% of them said, yes, sure, no problem. And we created, we pulled together a summit with 30 speakers in 3 weeks' time and then just gave it away for free.
Yeah. It's amazing.
How do you find the podcast helps with networking for you?
Oh, it's incredible. It truly is. And it's everything that you just described. You're around amazing people, and you've been on my podcast before, and I hold you to, you know, to that same high level of regard.
Thank you.
The ability to connect with people on a podcast like this, first of all, there's a skill to it, right? It's maybe not for everyone, but it truly is a beautiful thing. And what I found, and I'd be curious if you found the same thing, is, you know, when you start to build your network of amazing guests, those guests, if they have a great experience, and I know you give a great experience, are more than likely going to want to help connect you with others that are in their circle, right? Mm-hmm. So it just keeps growing larger and larger. Most of the guests that I've had on the show and the guests that I have coming up on the show are as a result of prior guests that I had on. And when you're around amazing people know other amazing people. So it's really been a blessing, and it's helped out tremendously.
You, and the jockeying of ideas intellectually becomes a blast. It's like intellectual tennis.
Yeah.
And it's so inspiring and stimulating. And I learn as I interview. It's amazing.
Yeah. I love it. My show, although there may be certain topics, certain types of questions as I research a guest that I want to hopefully address, but it's a free form conversation because I want that conversation to be raw and be real and get to the heart and soul of who that individual is, as opposed to, you know, having a script that says, okay, you know, ask this question 5 minutes, here's the next question, right? And it's a process map. It's to me, that's so obvious.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate thing, because I think you're missing the real types of relationships that can take place. So I appreciate it when I'm on a podcast and it's a real conversation, right? We're getting to know one another. The ideas, like you just mentioned, are flowing, and we're challenging one another. We're learning new things, right? I mean, when you and I talk, I mean, it challenges some of my own beliefs, and I'm totally okay. I want that. That's how I grow.
Well, and I got to say that my experience of being on your podcast was fantastic. I think you do a hell of a job as an interviewer and a host.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So I've got to wrap up now. Yes, and sir. In wrapping up, tell listeners where can they get a hold of you if they would like to?
Well, thank you for the question. So yes, you can reach me. You can find out about everything I'm doing, including all of my social platforms, the business show, other services that I provide, by going to J Scott Consulting jscottservices.com. jscottconsultingservices.com. And by the way, Scott is my middle name.
I was wondering about that. And what about social media?
I'm on or every LinkedIn. Platform. Yeah. Active on LinkedIn. And if you go to my website, you'll have access to each of my social platforms.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I greatly appreciate the time and the wisdom that you've shared today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm grateful to you and thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
My pleasure. And that's it for this episode of The Evolved Caveman. Thanks so much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.